Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. I'm Jeff Loggeman, and across the table from me, or alongside the table with me, is head coach Gus Bradley. Gus, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Good to be with you again, Logs.
How's the attitude of your team?
You know what? It's very good. Very good. Had a couple of good days of practice. Really competitive practices. You know, I keep thinking about, our corner spot and just some other positions where but really the whole team is competing. That's something that you watch for as a coaching staff. You watch their spirit, because if you got great spirit, great enthusiasm, it's really important because you got a chance to get better. Mm-hmm. And, I give our guys a lot of credit because of that.
Does youth have maybe something to do with that? Because, I mean, these guys understand that, hey, we're young, we're hungry, and we got to get better. Is that part of it?
Well, I can say this. They're hungry to get better, without a doubt. And there's so much learning taking place that they're just taking it all in. And I think it's really good. We've got some veteran guys, that have played a lot of football, and they kind of understand it. It's the younger guys that are, just saying, all right, let me get my world right. Let me get my job right. And then we'll go from there, before elevating everybody else. I just want to make sure I'm doing what I need to do. But you know what? We're seeing progress in that area.
I've been on some teams to where when things don't go right, most people would think that the veteran guys are the ones that are kind of keeping it together. But sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes the veteran guys are like, what are we doing here? They almost get deflated because they came from somewhere that where they were used to winning. And I'm not trying to point a finger at Chris Clemens or Red Bryant, but I mean guys that come from even college programs and maybe where they had great success, and then they encounter a challenge.
Well,
and how they react?
Yeah, I think it's for all of them now. Like Puz and Chris Clemens, Red Bryant, Ziggy, Zane Beatles. I mean, look at all these guys, but. They came here because of the challenge, just like I think, we all came here. As I said, hey, this is a great opportunity. I'm here, and we get a chance to leave our mark and, really challenge our leadership ability. Yeah, we've all been in places where, maybe we've won, and to lead a team like that or be a part of a team like that. But now to come to a team that has so much promise, it's so exciting, and to say, all right, but we're struggling a little bit to lead that team. That's challenging. And it's taken it to new depths of leadership. And, boy, I tell you what, it's just remarkable to see these guys, just how much they're growing as just people in that capacity. So really pleased with our veterans, pleased.
When you talk about taking it to new levels of leadership, I think of with a young team a lot of times because, you talked about this and many times before. He said it's great when a team takes ownership.
Right.
Because then the team pretty much is leading itself with veteran guys and all that. How important has it been for you to work with your staff at providing that leadership to a lot of these young players that maybe, for example, the wide receiver position, there's really not a veteran guy. I mean, Cecil's the most veteran guy, but he can't do it all for everybody. But how important is it for your coaching staff to provide some of that leadership right now?
Oh, very important. That's a challenge for us, is we provide the leadership until they take it over. It's, and that sounds like you're just turning it over to them, but really it just becomes that much more powerful. I think that, you've got some younger guys, you've got some veteran guys that are maybe trying to get an idea, we're trying to build trust. You need to do your job. Come on, we're asking you to do one thing. You need to do it. And they're like, okay, that maybe didn't work, getting after them that hard. They didn't respond, and maybe there's a different way I have to approach this. And they're going there, and they're encouraging guys and saying, hey, we're going to get this. We're going to get this. And they're seeing maybe faster improvement. So that's the part I think they're learning as veterans. But veterans, coaches, we're all in this. But now some of our guys that have played some games, I know it's five, and you say, well, they're still rookies, but we don't talk to them that way. We talk to them and say, hey, you've got some games under your belt now. Now let's go out there and perform at even a higher level.
Are you starting to see with some of these young players the signs of leadership to where these young players, because in 20-something years of watching the NFL and being a player in the National Football League, some guys just got it. Whether they're a rookie, whether they developed into a 10-year good player or not, some guys just got it.
You know what? It's probably similar to kids. You know how if you have four kids, you go, that one, I don't know which one, but what personality that one came from, you know, because that's not like me or my wife.
Right.
But it's kind of like a team. You know, you go, okay, you know, some guys, the leadership or the progress they make is faster. Other guys, it might be a little bit slower, and maybe their leadership isn't as strong as some of the other guys, but it'll come, you know, if you encourage it. And so, you know, guys do it at a little bit different pace, and you're challenging them all to play at a high level. But, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's different, and that's what I think is unique and great about it.
Well, there's one thing that is for certain, I think, that I learned, is that success kind of has to go along with leadership. In other words, the person that's leading has to have a certain level of success to be able to have, I guess, the ears bend his way in a locker room and then also in a leadership situation.
Well, I think, yeah, sure, success is important. But I think, you know, we always talk about leadership is, you know, if you help people get better, and I think the number one thing is the players recognize is, do you have an agenda? You know, if you have an agenda, your heart isn't purely to help them get better, they pick up on that, and you have no chance of leading. It doesn't matter if you're successful. So I think that they sense that the coaches and everybody's in this and has no agenda other than to make them the best they are. And I think that type of leadership they follow.
How many years have you been in the National Football League now?
Have any idea? 7 or 8. Yeah,
okay, 7 or 8 years. You know, you had time with Seattle. Yep. You had time with Tampa Bay, and then here. Anywhere else, or is it just those three?
These three places.
Those three places. In those three places, give me an example or a person that you had the opportunity to watch, not necessarily coach directly, but you had the opportunity to watch that you looked at them and said, that is the kind of leadership that I would love to have one day as a head football coach.
Wow.
Because I know you were spent time with Derek Brooks.
Yeah, well, obviously
you speak
that
very
name,
highly of
yeah.
him.
Yeah, and you know what? I give credit to all the places I've been at. I mean, Derek Brooks, Rondé Barber, you know, those type of leaders, outstanding. And then in Seattle, you know, Russell Wilson, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, you know, to name a few. And then here, guys like Puz and Chris Clemens and Red Bryant and, you know, even Tyson Alulu, I think, is a tremendous leader. He's not real loud or a vocal leader, but his work ethic is unmatched. So I think there's a lot of different levels of leadership or varieties of it. But, you know, I think as you look at, you're impressed by all forms. And just fortunate to be around good people that, you know, I think what you're really looking for is people that have a tremendous passion for football, tremendous work ethic, and a tremendous amount of belief. That's what you're looking for in the qualities of players.
Ryan Robinson had handed me a sheet this week, and Ryan Robinson works in the Jaguars Public Relations Department, works hand-in-hand with you on quite a number of things. And this was from last week. Week 5 in the National Football League, you guys had 7 rookies starting because Pittsburgh came out in a nickel they came out in 3 wide receiver sets, so you were in a nickel defense. So Telvin Smith ended up being that rookie that maybe you didn't expect to be considered a starter. On game day, which gave you guys 7, which was a league high in the National Football League last week. And it's not surprising that there's very few teams that have over 2. There's only 4 teams besides you guys that have more than 2 rookie starters in the lineup. What has it been like as far as coaching the rookies and the challenges of coaching them in the first 5 weeks of the season?
Well, first of all, I'll say that I love it. I love coaching them, and I love being a part of them just because of their spirit and how they really, they're like a sponge and want to take everything in. The challenge is just to learn how fast and how much you can push them. And some things they just got to figure out on their own. Sometimes it's just going through a game and experiencing a game and learning on the run. And, you know, I think that's the challenging part. And then, you know, showing urgency but yet having patience is
that hard?
It is hard because you want the whole team. Your objective is to have the whole team play at their highest ability. And if you got some veterans that know how it works and then some young guys, you're trying to bring that into balance. And But I do know that by, you know, having patience and urgency and put them together, if it's the right amount, you can see fast progress. And that's what we're trying to find out, you know, but everybody's different. Everybody's different.
Is there anything that has surprised you? I mean, you look at all the rookies that you have on your football team, and there's many. From a positive standpoint, what has surprised you with maybe a rookie that maybe, you know, because, you know, I hate to say this, but most people have preconceived notions when a rookie comes in. You know, for example, okay, Marquise Lee and A-Rob, Allen Robinson, the wide receiver, second round picks, okay, these are going to be the guys.
Sure.
Allen Hurns comes in, undrafted rookie from Miami, okay, priority free agent, yeah, okay, we understand that. But, you know, with an example like that where you've got, you know, a draft pick versus an undrafted guy, and so maybe the expectation levels weren't the same for Allen Hurns as it was for Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, has there been anything that has surprised you with any of these rookie players to where you went, wow, I wasn't expecting that in a positive fashion?
Right. Well, I think they all have their story. You know, Brandon Linder, I didn't know that he would come in and perform at a level he's doing so fast. We felt like he could be pretty good, but to play at the level he's playing at this fast, I think is intriguing.
Let me stop you right there just for a minute, because you know the first piece of film that I watched on Brandon Linder? It was the Senior Bowl one-on-one pass rush. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He didn't look very good.
No, you know what, but you know, you watch a body of work. You watch all of his plays, and you put it together.
Was interesting to me because that was the first piece of film that I watched, and this is an example of myself having a preconceived notion.
Right.
That was the first piece of film I watched on this guy, and you guys just drafted him with a third-round pick, and I was sitting there going, So I went back and watched all of the games that he matched up against other high draft picks, you know, the Jernigans, the guy that was at Pitt.
Right.
And all of a sudden, okay, then you're like, okay, now I understand why they drafted
him
third.
Well, I think it's what's hard, and I completely understand it with the fans. Take, for example, Allen Hurns, great preseason, great first couple games, and then it's like we're really high on him, and then, oh, he has a couple drops. Oh, we're really, you know, disappointing. And then, you know, it's that up and down. Well, as coaches, we're developmental coaches. That's our mindset. So we're looking and say, hey, he did some really good things. He still has a ways to go, but he's doing some really positive things. Okay, he dropped a couple balls. Well, there's, you know, it happens. It happens in a game. Now, how are you gonna handle this, Hernsey? You know, what's your mind like? You know what, Gus? I wanted to get back and practice Wednesday, but I had to wait 2 days to get this corrected. And say, that's all right, man. That's the drive that you gotta have. And now Wednesday, you practice. How's it feel? Better. I caught balls off the jugs machine. I have it corrected. Okay, now let's go back out and play. You know, but, you know, it's that encouragement, those things that you go through. But as coaches, we're there to challenge them, say, hey, you got to get your mind right and go work at it. Go to the jugs machine, catch some balls, and challenge yourself to work through this. And you're learning how to deal with adversity because it's going to come back again now. And by this, how you learn how to handle it and that you can overcome it and go back and perform, that's great learning. Great learning for our guys because it builds consistency. So with all our rookies, there's stories like that that are taking place. Shoot, there's stories like that with our veterans, mm-hmm. you know, that are taking place. So you just, you know, you got to keep challenging them and encourage them and, you know, make it a competitive situation so that they're at their best.
All right. When we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show, I want to talk about Cecil Shorts and Toby Gerhart, Marquise Lee, Ace Anderson, guys that, whether it be injuries or kind of getting back into the flow. I know you talked about them today at your press conference, and we'll do just that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Now, here on the Gus Bradley Show, we like to share responsibilities, and I'd like to give you an opportunity, Gus, to read a sponsor's card here.
You
want to try it?
You are a true professional at doing that, Logs. There's no one better than you, Logs.
This is actually pretty good. Are you sure you don't want to try that?
Okay, here we go.
You go for it.
When it comes to flavor, go the whole nine yards. Go for Goldfish Crackers. They're tasty, fun treats that come in multiple varieties of deliciousness. So don't drop the ball. Grab the Goldfish. It's the official snack of game day. How about that?
That was
perfect.
That was because it's actually spelled out O, and I guess apostrophe, F-I-S, apostrophe, A-L, so official. Good. Very nicely done. You want to read the rest of them today while we're at it?
No, you're good.
All right. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show, Jeff Loggeman here with the head coach. And today at your press conference, a little bit of surprising news. Not many people expected you to walk into the press conference and say that Cecil Shorts practiced today.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. What? Yeah, you know what? And he practiced. You know, right now, we're trying to make sure that we get the practice reps in, we develop these guys, they get a good feel for the game plan, but yet make sure that they're at full speed on Sunday. So we have quite a few receivers on our roster. So you'll see it in practice that we kind of split up the reps. Obviously, the guys that are going to be playing for the most part get the majority of reps, but we still filter in guys. So it means that maybe they don't get 10 reps in a row. They might get 6, another guy gets 2, and another guy gets 2. But so Cecil was in that mix. He got some reps today and went through all of practice, didn't sit on any drill work, didn't sit on any teamwork. He got some reps in there and performed pretty well. So, we just need to see that consistency, see how he comes back tomorrow after today's practice, and get a feel for it.
Is there a certain level of comfort, as a head coach to where you've got to have that comfort to go into game day expecting that he, all of a sudden, first couple snaps, all of a sudden you don't have a flare-up to where you're comfortable that he's going to be okay?
Yeah, and that's where we're at. He played the San Diego game. He's out one game. So our return to play protocol, gives him a chance to, it's sped up some. But, we just need to see. I want to make sure that, first of all, it's right for Cecil. We want to do what's right for him and for our team so that week after week we have him. So it's a delicate balance, and, we're taking it at our pace that we feel comfortable with him, and we'll see how he comes back tomorrow.
Let's stay in that same position group, because Marquise Lee has missed a number of weeks with a hamstring issue, which I had a hamstring. It was after my playing days, and I was playing paintball with the kids and pulled a hamstring. And I'm going to tell you, Gus, it hurt for like a year.
It is. It sounds like a hamstring deal. But it is. And if you don't take care of it and don't treat it right, they can come back. And that's why, we may be a little conservative on it. But just because, really, we look at us, and I think right now our team's pretty healthy. Knock on wood, we're very healthy. And I think a part of it is just how we handled training camp and how we handled all the mini camps and the OTAs. And we're fairly healthy right now. We've had a couple hamstrings and things like that, but overall, good. We just got to, and I think it's because we've been a little conservative with guys who are not so much conservative, but just made them go through the whole return to play protocol. And it's a good check and balance for us.
Is it easier to be more conservative with a young player? Because most young players typically haven't really fully understood their bodies and what the demands are for playing in a regular season National Football League game.
Well, there's a lot that goes into it. It's past history. You look back in their college career, the injuries they might have had, and then how have they responded since they've been here. So there's so much information. I give credit to Scott Drulock and Milo, for handling our return to play, and they do an outstanding job of it. We're just really waiting to say, okay, Gus, he's ready to go, and he can get 2 reps a period or 3 reps a period, and we'll bring him back accordingly.
With a guy like Ace Sanders, I mean, totally not injury related. The suspension, he's back. Do you still have almost a return to play protocol for a player that's had inactivity like that?
Well, because it's such, he can run sprints on the third field while we're practicing on field number 1 and do some agilities, but there's nothing like playing. And there's nothing like putting the pads on and going out there and performing. So you can work out all you want, but really, we got to check. Like Clay Harbor, remember when he came back and he was working out crazy with Milo, but when he came back, he needed that work in the team setting just for his win. So, everybody's different. It's not only the injury that they've got to come back from, but also just, as far as being in top shape.
With Ace, did you still see a little rust on him, though? I mean, just first game back, maybe even – nerves. I mean, when you miss some time like that and it's your first game back, I would think that you got to be a little bit nervous.
Well, I think, with Ace, and you know, he wanted to come back and make a splash. You know, I had a couple good returns in preseason, my first game back, and just like we talked about with that mindset now, I'm coming back, it's my first game, I'm going to take it to the house, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be Superman, and no, Ace, just do what you do. Just, you know, be the best at what you do. That's all we're asking. And some guys try to push it, but it's a great learning for Ace, because I know one of the things Ace and I talked about was last year, he's got to trust it. Trust it. Go north and south, you know, and make some people miss, but really trust it. And coming into this year in preseason, that's what he did. And now his first opportunity back, we'll get him quickly back to that.
Last guy to talk about an injury here, Toby Gerhart, I guess, did not practice today. Reportedly had a foot injury, I guess, this past weekend against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is this something that started going all the way back to Philadelphia?
Yeah, you know what? Toby Gerhart, man, he is one tough son of a gun. I mean, you know, he's been battling it, and you know, but he practices, you know, last week he practiced, he felt pretty good going the game, but it's lingering, and I think we just felt like, hey, let's give him a break, and let's see how he responds to a day off.
All right, when we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show, want to talk a little bit of Tennessee Titan football here, your upcoming opponent who is coached by a guy that actually played football with in New York, Ken Wisenhunt, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jaguar fans, do you want your photo or tweet on the massive new Jaguars video boards? Hashtag JagsGameDayLive and be a part of the game experience. The social drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. And we're back here on the Head Coach's Show, the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, this week with the Tennessee Titans, they have new head coach, Ken Wisenhunt, who coached the Arizona Cardinals for, I think, about 7 years, I want to say, from, and I got it written down right here, not 7 years, 07 to 12. Actually, he was a teammate of mine. I played with him from, and I wrote it down here, 91 to 93 with the New York Jets. Great guy.
Yeah, you know, I've obviously when we were in Seattle, we went against Arizona, so know him through those games, but met him personally at the owners' meetings, and just everything I hear about him, tremendous person, tremendous guy, and you know, he did a good job in Arizona. I'm sure he'll do a great job in Tennessee.
He's got an offensive coordinator, and he's a first-time offensive coordinator, and his name is Jason Michael. When you're trying to game plan, and obviously you have a little bit of, you know, history because you've not only played against Ken Wisenhunt back when you were with Seattle, but then also last year when he was the offensive coordinator with the San Diego Chargers, you've got five games to look at from this year. But does Ken Wisenhunt's traits carry over to their offensive coordinator?
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure, you know, one of the things with Coach Wisenhunt, they'll probably look at our San Diego game, you know, because similar offenses and do a lot of the same things, so see how we played them. But, you know, had a distinct personality in Arizona. You know, a lot of, I think, Pittsburgh flavor. You know, back when they had the two tights and they brought the Z receiver in close and ran crunch plays and things like that. So, you know, you see his flavor. I think there's a mixture of, you know, his time at San Diego as well. So, but, you know, they do a good job because they adjust to the personnel they have. They try to utilize the talent that they have.
You talk about that Pittsburgh flavor. He was with Pittsburgh from 01 to 06, 6 years total. 3 years as the tight ends coach, and then 3 years as their offensive coordinator. So that's where that flavor comes from.
Yeah, and you see it on tape. You know, I know we saw it on tape in Arizona. You see glimpses of it as well here.
Well, and the one thing that I'm looking at on tape from this week is I'm looking at an offensive line that's pretty doggone good.
Yeah, you know, some first-round draft picks in there. You know, if you look across the board, very talented. And they've done a good job running the ball. I think they're averaging what
I think 5 right at 5.
Yards, yeah, 5-point yards. So that's top five right there. So, you know, that's really a credit to the offensive line.
Yeah, but you talk about draft picks and you said high picks. The starting left tackle this week is going to be Taylor Lewan, who was a first-round pick who they got out of Michigan, was the 11th overall pick. Michael Roos has gone down, is going to have, I guess, some knee surgery today.
Yep.
Andy Levitre, the guy who they got as a free agent from the Buffalo Bills, he was a second-round pick. Schwenke, their center, not Schmenge, not to be confused with Schmenge, the former Jaguar great, But Schwenke, a fourth-round pick last year. Chance Womack was their first-round pick, 10th overall last year out of Alabama. And then Michael Orr, he was a first-round pick, I believe, for the Baltimore Ravens too. So, I mean, they've got some high picks.
Right, and they got some experience, you know, six years, 3 years, something like that. So, that you know, it's just playing together. You know, they picked up a couple of guys from other teams, you know, with Orr coming in. But, you know, when you're averaging 5.0 yards a carry, that's pretty good run game. Pretty good run game. And they've got the backs to do it as well.
When you as a coach look at that number, you know, yards per rush, when you're and as a defensive coach first, what's a number that you consider successful in today's NFL? Because it's very different, what, 15 years ago than it is today.
Well, generally on defense, if you hold a team, I believe when we looked at it, it's moved up. But I would say like 4.1. If you're holding a team to 4.1 yards per attempt, you know, that would put you like at 10th or 12th, somewhere in there in the league. And, you know, but it seems high, doesn't it? Seems like
yeah, I mean, because
be
back in the day, you were like, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, and then we used to go for, hey, and just get them under four. Get them under four every opportunity, you're doing a good job. So to be at five tells you a little something.
Okay, now how about offensively? You know, you guys, and I'm not sure what your yards per carry average is. You've got the sheet right there.
Yeah. 3.5.
Okay, you're averaging 3.5. What is the number that you would consider to be successful for your offense or team you're coaching?
Well, once again, if you're over four, you know, then you're doing pretty good. And we're at 3.5. And some of that was because we struggled early in the year.
Right.
And, you know, it's getting better. So we're almost looking at game by game. And, you know, coaches are crazy. They'll take out, well, third and one, you know, they get 1 yard. You surely can't count that, you know.
Yeah, but so, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Right.
So, you know, overall, but that'd be a good number for us. If we were over four, if we climbed, we got this over four after the start we had, that would show pretty good.
Is that the strength of their football team in the matchup this week?
Well, you know what? As far as the attempts and stuff they've had, what, 125 attempts. So, you know, when you watch it on tape, you'd think they'd run the ball more with that average. So we're going to the game figuring out that, hey, they're going to try to run the ball. We've given up some yards rushing. Lately, we've been a little bit better. But they could go in the game with that offensive line and the backs they have.
All right, we come back on the Gus Bradley Show because of the strength. If it is their offensive line, the question mark, the biggest question mark might be who's going to be their quarterback this week for the Tennessee Titans. And we'll get into that with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
360 Access is your source for VIP experiences, fan travel, and game day hospitality for college and professional sports nationwide. So as you ponder the college football and pro games you're planning to attend, there's only one option for you to consider. 360 Access. You don't want to mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to make sure you have the best experience at the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com.
Grab a Bud Light and gather around, NFL fans, to hear the tale of Gail Hammerschmidt, a true legend of the game. Hand of the football gods, Gail once tailgated for 34 straight Jaguars games, even cutting her honeymoon short to make the Sunday night game. What was Gail's best 40-yard dash time? I don't know. But I do know no one was quicker to the mini-fridge for an ice-cold Bud Light. But there are many Gail Hammerschmidts. Well, figuratively. I mean, Hammerschmidt's a pretty weird name. Anyway, point is, Gail's one of many fans for whom the love of the game and the love of Bud Light is truly epic. This season, some will be rewarded with experiences like tickets or even an ultimate NFL weekend, courtesy of Bud Light. So be like Gail this season and visit your local beer aisle or upforwhatever.com for more details. Bud Light, the perfect beer for whatever happens.
Ultimate NFL experience open to U.S. residents 21 plus. No purchase necessary. Ends 12/31/14. See upforwhatever.com for details. Void where prohibited. Enjoy responsibly. Bud Light Beer. AB, St. Louis, Missouri.
Listen up, kids. This is Coach Gus Bradley of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Daly's Shell Stores are looking for you.
Coach, they're kids, so maybe go a little softer.
Oh, okay.
Daly's wants kids to have what it takes to sprint onto the field after kickoff and bring back the kickoff tee, as well as stand next to the players during the coin toss and even enjoy 4 pregame passes, club seats, and other really awesome prizes.
How was that?
Better.
Enter your kid this week at your local Daly's Shell Store or online at daly'skickoffkid.com.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. And we're back here on the Coach's Show, the Gus Bradley Show. And just a big thank you to the guys that are the chefs for your football team. Brought us in a little gift. It's buffalo chicken coleslaw on waffles. That's pretty good. And I give you credit, Gus. You're showing a little discipline by not jumping in with both hands. But the guy across the table from us, Tony Buscelli,
dislocated his jaw. I think taking a bite of that.
Crazy.
Like a snake, man. His jaw. I've never seen it get so big.
All right. Hey, let's go take a caller. And if you want to get in, folks, 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the calling area. And let's go to Joseph, who is downtown. Good evening, Joseph.
Hey, guys. Coach, I can't believe you're letting Logs tell you he's watching film. He's watching the Whitetail Diaries. Come on.
Well, that's in the evening. That's not while I'm here.
I know. You're a great guy. I love your show on Saturday. I can tell you this. Mark my words. The next time the Steelers come to town, there's not going to be a season ticket nor a ticket to be had for their fans. I just got a weird feeling about the leadership that the coaching staff and Dave Caldwell's show, and I think it's awesome. And also, I want to talk about the leadership of your players. I realized with my son getting autographs from Denard, who remembered it from the Bishop Kenny game the day before, or 2 days before, that you got leaders on this team. They took the time to give autographs and stuff. And it's not about me anymore. I've been a season ticket holder from day one. I'm developing him as a Jaguar fan, and you know, hopefully he'll be playing football in high school and college. But if not, he's going to be a Jaguar fan. And I can tell you this, we're going to be in the fans. In the stands, and we're going to do it shoelace style.
Well, that's great. You know what? You're right. We've got some great personalities, great teammates. And, you know, I think we mentioned earlier about connect with the following. But what I like about our team is it's genuine. You know, they really enjoy our fans. They enjoy seeing them out at football games and kids. And there's absolutely no agenda. And a guy like Denard Robinson, he just loves kids and loves people. And to have that personality is great for our community.
Thank you, Joseph, for the call. Let's turn our attention back to the Tennessee Titans offense just for a minute, because I'd mentioned that the strength of their offense is their offensive line, the running game. And they've got some questions at quarterback. Jake Locker missed a game against the Indianapolis Colts 2 weeks ago because I guess it was a wrist, and then this past week against the Cleveland Browns is making a throw and his thumb hits a blitzing defensive back coming off the edge right in the helmet, and he did not practice yesterday or today. So as a coaching staff, do you guys prepare to or are expecting maybe to see a Charlie Whitehurst, or do you prepare for whoever it may be?
Well, you always take a look at you know, whoever's playing quarterback and always the backup, just in case you know, something happens, an injury. But this week it is a little bit more difficult because you're spreading your time. You know, they are a good running team. They're averaging 5.0 yards per carry, but their leading carrier for yards per carry is Jake. You know, he's at like 5.9 or something. So, and he has over 100 yards rushing. So, you know, he just gives an added dimension, the ability to run the ball. Well, that's not really Charlie. Charlie's not a guy that's going to run the read option and pull it and keep it. I mean, he might do it on occasion.
Did you know Charlie Whitehurst when he was in Seattle?
Yeah, I was there when Charlie was there.
Okay, so you know him very well.
Yeah, he's got – I'll tell you what, Charlie, I mean, he used to thread it, you know, in 7-on-7. You know, when he stood back there, he's got really good poise, you know, in 7-on-7 anyway, if that's a comment.
It's a little easier to have poise in 7-on-7 because the 7, there's no 4 down front guys coming at you.
But you know what? I think that's the case, you know, with a guy like Charlie, that I mean, he's been around for many years and he's been on teams. It says something that Coach Wisenhunt wanted to bring him to Tennessee from San Diego, so he holds him in high regard. I do as well. I think his poise, his accuracy, I mean, everything about him. I mean, we brought him up to Seattle because what we liked him on film, mm-hmm. and to brought him in with Matt Hasselbeck. So I mean, he's got some traits now, and he can obviously in the game against Cleveland, when he came in a touchdown pass the next series, a long explosive play for a touchdown. So very capable, very good leader for that team, but just completely different styles.
Now, I went back and watched his game because he started against the Indianapolis Colts, and he had a number of drops in that ball game. The one thing that I will say about him is that He may not want to run like a Jake Locker, but he has at least the appearance that he wants to push that ball down the field more than maybe a Jake Locker as far as throwing to deeper routes.
He does. Charlie has no fear. I mean, he'll take chances, and he believes that he can make any throw, you know, on the field. So, you know, they've done a good job to have a backup like Charlie. For this situation, if he does go in, if Jake can't go, Charlie can step in and do some really good things. And if you look at Charlie's stats,
his rating's like over 90.
Yeah, so very, very capable. So we've had to study both of them and really share it with our players that way.
At the end of the Indianapolis game, they ended up inserting Zach Mettenberger into that game, who I think was their sixth-round pick out of LSU. I know I'm sure you guys looked at him. Leading up to the draft, he was inserted in late in that game at Indianapolis when the game was pretty much over with to give him some snaps. And do you guys look at that and say, well, maybe he's even a possibility of playing this week?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard, you know, because teams won't really show their hand throughout the week. So, and I think he had like five or six attempts in that game.
Five attempts.
So, you know, you get a feel for him, but you know, there's certain things with a rookie. If he comes in the game, you know, I think you have to be prepared as far as, all right, if that happens, how would we attack him? And we got to know him well enough.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll talk about the other side of the ball, and that's the Tennessee Titans defense right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
This portion of the Gus Bradley Show is brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Before we talk about the Tennessee Titans defense, let's talk for a minute about the Titans wide receivers, because they have a trio of wide receivers. Gus, Nate Washington, a veteran guy, has been around for a long time, very consistent. Kendall Wright, a first-round pick from a couple years ago, a smaller guy, very shifty, and a guy that has started to flash. His name is Justin Hunter. He only has 30 career receptions, but five of them are for touchdowns.
Yeah, and he's got, close to a 20-yard average as far as per catch. So, yeah, they are a talented receiving core. And, you know, that I think Wright's got the most catches at 25. And then throw on it, you know, the guy like Delanie Walker, who, you know, who's played a lot of football, tight end at San Francisco, and then went to Tennessee last year. And, you know, he's got really good speed. So they've got some threats on the perimeter. And to go along with that running game, you know, it's a challenge.
And they love multiple tight ends because Delanie Walker's kind of that move, that H-back kind of wide receiver that I also like to split him out. Is he a guy that you would consider matching up a defensive back instead of a linebacker on him? Because, his numbers are speaking like he could be one of those guys.
Well, it could be, you know, and when they're in three wides, then obviously you'd have a safety, possibly a linebacker, depending on the coverage, you know, on him when you're playing man coverage. And then in base, you know, you might want to put a safety on him instead of a tight or a linebacker. So it really depends on your matchups and who you have playing in the game and how you want to try to attack him.
All right, let's take a phone call here. Let's go talk to Dave down in Fleming Island's got a question about quarterback and Alan Ball. Good evening, Dave.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks, Coach. Just a couple quick questions I wanted to ask. One about Blake Bortles. And I know in the preseason there seemed to be quite a few, I guess, seam passes or, you know, more down the middle of the field than there have been in his you know, game and a half that he's played so far. And I'm wondering, is that because of the defensive scheme why we're not doing that quite as much, or maybe what the reasoning behind? And then the other question I had was, I'm curious to know how Alan Ball is doing. We haven't heard about him a lot, and I guess I'm hoping that's a good thing. I know he batted down a pass in San Diego, but it seems to me like he's playing pretty good ball right now at a high level. So those are my questions for you, Coach. I appreciate your time.
Oh,
I'll take it off the air.
No problem, Dave. I think, you know, what you're looking for is seam routes or whatever the style of routes, but you're looking for explosive passes and the number of passes downfield. And that's one thing that we took a look at. You know, how many opportunities do we have for bigger gains, plus 16 yards? And, you know, sometimes you'll see it on tape. You'll see that we had deeper developing routes, but the way they covered it, maybe it was quarters coverage and they had them doubled so you hit the check down. You know, so at times when you do try for an explosive pass, you know, Blake's got to get, you know, give what's there for him. And sometimes it appears like a check down. Why are we dumping it off? Well, we were taking a shot. The check down's open. Actually, on the throw that was a touch or interception, you know, was it, we were going for an explosive play, and Denard Robinson was sitting in the flat uncovered, and he could have caught it, and probably the first time he got hit would have been for 20 yards.
So that could have been an explosive play.
It could be an explosive play, yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes those things develop. But you're right, seam passes, you look at the number of receptions tight ends have had in the league this year, and a lot of them have been on seam routes. And, you know, so you're looking at it, and you've got to find a way to exploit a defense. Some of it is based on how the defense is playing you.
And also, how important would an effective running game be to explosive plays? Doesn't that play a big part?
It does, just because now the play action. You know, you got the play passes where the linebackers bite. You got a chance to get behind them. So, yeah, we need to get the running game for multiple reasons. In terms of Alan Ball, I thought Alan Ball was really challenged last week. I think that, you know, he felt it, and I thought he had a tremendous week of practice. Tremendous. You know, he took his work ethic. I mean, it's always been strong, but I should say focus more than anything. His focus was at a new level. So the last week now, he had a really good week, and he's had a good week thus far. So hopefully he continues that.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. And as promised, we're going to get to the Tennessee Titans defensive side of the football and a new defensive coordinator that they have right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back. Jeff Logan along with head coach Gus Bradley. And we're going to talk a little Tennessee Titans defense. Gus, looking at their defense, they've got a new defensive coordinator, Ray Horton. They have been a 4-3 in Tennessee forever. I mean, I don't know if they have ever been a 3-4 defense. But Ray Horton comes in. He's a Dick LeBeau disciple, I guess you could say, and he's making that switch to the 3-4-1. I watched the film on them. I'm seeing a defense that still seems to be in transition and trying to find their way a little bit.
Yeah, it is. It's always a challenge, you know, especially the first year when you're changing schemes and you're trying to find out, you know, specific players, what traits they have and how they fit into your new scheme. You know, a guy like Derek Morgan, now is an outside linebacker. So, you know, now he's taking on the fullback, and, you know, it's just different. But a highly talented player, very athletic. So they're saying, hey, you know what, it's just like Peppers. You know, he was always a 4-3 defensive end. Then he goes to Green Bay, and he dropped and got a pick, yeah. You know, in a 3-4. So, you know, there could be a transition times, but generally if you're athletic like these guys are, the transition can happen faster.
Well, and Ray Horton's had some pretty – good success. I mean, he was a former defensive coordinator with Ken Wisenhunt in Arizona. Last, I think he was in Cleveland as a defensive coordinator, so he's got great experience. But they're losing a guy on defense that many consider that he is the captain of that defense, so to speak, and he's strong safety Bernard Pollard. Kind of an enforcer type, a guy that certainly you can see his leadership qualities when you watch him play the game. How much does a defense and a defense in transition miss a guy like that?
Well, it all depends on what they put on his plate. You know, is he making the checks? Is the linebacker making the checks? Does he control the secondary, the rotations, and things like that? So it's really what they put on his plate. You would assume, because of his leadership, the number of years he's played, he has probably a pretty good handle, probably played in multiple defenses. So, you know, it always stings you. It always hurts you. But, you know, that's in the NFL your backup is going to be, you know, someone that's athletic as well and can play the position.
Great carryover for Blake Bortles from Pittsburgh Steelers to the Tennessee Titans. Is there similarities?
Yeah, I would say as a foundation, hey, there's a 3-4 team. You're playing another 3-4 team. Some similar blitzes as last week, but different personalities. You know, Ray might play more man-to-man in certain situations. Maybe third downs handle a little bit differently. You know, so you find out their personalities within the scheme.
You guys haven't faced a 4-3 defense yet.
No, you're right. You're right. And, you know, that's one of the challenges. We, in our defensive system, we have 4-3 and 3-4 principles. So, fortunately for our offense, they've had a chance to see it, you know, in training camp.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. I want to talk about Blake Bortles here for the last segment. And we'll do exactly that on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Some of the things said in the commercial breaks are not for air. We'll just leave it at that. But we did learn some great coaching moments there here on the Gus Bradley Show. Quick comment on Blake Bortles. third start coming up. Are you starting to see the maturity start to show and the comfort level for being the starting quarterback?
Well, I think when we made the decision that he was ready to go, we saw that poise. We saw that competitiveness, his demeanor in the huddle. So all those things, I mean, he does a great job with that. And his decision-making has been good. 70% completion. You know, we had the first drive of the Pittsburgh game, 12 plays.
Yeah, I think it might have even been like 15 with some 15, penalties in or something like that.
You know, that's great. We just need to finish with seven, you know, on those situations. But it's good. And you know what? He's had some interceptions, but everybody can help on that. Receivers come back to the ball, him himself, you know, good decisions, things like that. But I love his competitiveness and his no show of fear at all. You know, he's so competitive, and he's going to challenge himself, and he's had a really good week so far.
That's the thing that probably impresses me the most, and I think I said this before, he's kind of got Gore-Tex skin. You know, things just kind of roll off.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. I give credit to his mom and dad or George O'Leary. Yeah. You know, but
what about Frank Selfo, your quarterback?
Well,
coach.
Frank has even taken it to another level. No, I give a lot of credit to Blake. I think that's how he is as a person. I don't think anything has really fazed him that manner. But, I mean, he's got a lot of football to play, and he'll continue to grow. But exciting player to be around.
All right, I want to give a little promotion here because next Thursday, a week from tonight, there's going to be an event going on. It's a football 101 workshop, and it's going to be held here at the stadium. People want to get involved with it. They can go to jaguars.com, or they can, in fact, jaguars.com/2014NFL101. This is a workshop that's going to be led by coaches, players, some of the y'all's wives are actually kind of helping put this together, help educate women. It's a pretty good little event.
It's a great event. Raised a lot of money last year and had a great time in doing it.
And it raises money for the Jacksonville's Hill Breast Center. Folks, if you want to register again, jaguars.com/2014NFL101. We'll talk to everybody same time, same place next week. And for those in Jacksonville, stick around. J.P. Shadrick and Tony Baselli join us.